Page 8, line 14. Each county governing body shall appoint a panel of 3 or 5 full-time commercial farm operators. I don't believe that...
I don't believe there is a definition.
There isn't a definition.
I'm sorry, I just thought you were talking about the other section.
How about qualified farm operators?
Don't believe there's a... Well, presumably, the qualified farm operator would mean a full-time commercial farmer.
So part of that sentence could be collapsed, so that, right now, the way it looks like it reads, that you would have a, they would select 5 full-time commercial farm operators out of a list of qualified farm operators, which may or may not include full-time commercial farm operators. Is that right? But right now, you're saying probably they're one and the same.
Yeah, that's the way I would read it, yes. And you're absolutely right. I do not believe there is a definition for...
Who would define that?
That's a very good point. Very good question.
I had one other question, just with regards to definition, I guess. And I was down here 2 weeks ago. I didn't get testified. This does go back just a little bit.
That's fine.
That's all right. I also have a question is, with the definition of substantial compliance. Says means a comprehensive plan or land use. This is on page 3. Substantial compliance means a comprehensive plan or land use regulation or plan or land use regulation amendment complies with the goals and all material and substantial particulars. What does that mean now?
Mr. Clark, that was a drafting error, and that will be deleted from the bill. That is some language that's being used in a bill on the House side, and we're...
Okay, 17 will be deleted?
Yeah.
That parenthesis 17?
237, yes.
All right. I think it's...
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Roberts.
I think that ought to be clarified. That question of how you define substantial compliance and the questions about it are being dealt with in a separate bill in the House, which eventually will come over here and we will consider with, but we aren't taking up that question in this committee because it hasn't been...
Okay, I thought it was still on the docket. I didn't realize you deleted it already.
Isn't that true, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, there's another land use bill in the House.
Do you know the number of that, just so they're...
2295, I believe.
It bothers me a bit when I see some words, and there seem to be quite a few of them, really. For that substantial compliance did stand, I wouldn't have any idea what that really meant. And I find the same thing true as far as qualified farm operators and full-time commercial farm operators. I think part of the problem that we have right now in land use planning is because things are not well-defined. Compliance isn't well-defined. Committed isn't well-defined. I don't think substantial compliance is going to come out well-defined either. I did have a handout. I think the secretary dropped off, but he...
Yes, we have it here.
And a part of it is not, it is really not pertaining to the sections you plan on covering, Dave, but I'll be quick. I'd like to just read through it, though.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Senate Bill 237 is not the vehicle for reform of state land use law. The basic problem lies with Goal 3. Goal 3 requires that we place controls on private properties with soil capability classes 1 through 4 in private Oregon and Western Oregon at the expense of the owner. However, the soil classes do not and never were intended to measure the fertility of the soils. They measure the ability to get on the soil and the risk of damage to the soil. In Western Oregon, the primary limitation is erosional hazard. As a result, the classes mostly measure the slope of the land. The correlation is dramatic when soil class map is compared with a topographic map of an area. Class 5s or class 6 is a steep soil. It's 30%, you know, slope or greater. Two soil types of the same soil capability class may vary by more than 2-to-1 in productivity. An analysis of variation in productivity of soils based on soil capability versus variation based on soil type on some soils found within Clackamas County are attached. They show the soil type is far better predictor of agricultural land than soil capability. Senate Bill 237 does not address this point. Soil productivity, crop cost per acre, crop revenue per acre are important factors and are available through the OSU publication Economic Information from OSU Cooperative Extension Service. And then I also put in the sentence that 70% of Clackamas County farms have net losses. And the gross, the magnitude of the losses exceeds the magnitudes of the gains. Okay. I have attached the 1978 return. They did, up through 1979, the Revenue Service did break down farm income and what the losses versus gains is concerned. And I got a 1978 edition here. When I called them, that was a couple of years ago. They had not yet printed the 1979, and they said at that time they weren't going to separate them out by county from then on. So what you're looking at there is Clackamas County. And I've boxed in the positive returns, which comprised about 29% of the returns. And then it gives the amount, $6,199,000. 71% of the returns were losses at $10,101,000. Right. To give you some idea, you know, as far as productivity of farmland, if you would, also the other two pages, the pages that deal with this little cross-section I did are on, I think we find on the second and third pages, or fourth, third and fourth pages in. What I've done is I've taken the winter wheat yield tables. I made a winter wheat yield table. On the left-hand column, those are soil types. I had a soil scientist out of Clackamas County send me kind of a cross-section of different soil types in the county, and then off those sheets, you can pick off the estimated production under high level management. And what you're seeing there is the returns in bushels per acre, and I have it cross-checked by soil type versus soil capability classes. What I've done down at the bottom is I've calculated a pooled variance for the productivity within the soil capability classes. And it comes out to be 24.8, which shows that there's an awful lot of deviation within a given soil capability number. And that's obvious by just looking at the tables itself. Pool standard deviation productivity within soil type is only 5.8. So soil the soil type is a better predictor by far than soil capability classes. And of course, soil capability numbers weren't established to do that anyway. You know, that wasn't their objective as far as measure. The next one, I went and took another crop, just filbert yield table, and have done the same thing. And of course, you see there's really no, via the limited number of soil types I have that actually listed filberts as a possible crop on them, you see that there's no deviation across according to the capability numbers, right? All the deviation has to do with as you run down through the different soil types. Now, a person could take this and do this, in fact, of all soil types throughout the county. He sent me just a batch of them, and there's not all the sheets, say, for Clackamas County are there by any means, you know. That's not on the agenda today, but then going on down to the marginal land, I missed that. But I feel like the definition of marginal land is one of the it's one of the finest definitions of the empty set I've seen in a long time. Timber production of 50 cubic feet per acre per year corresponds to a site index of 75. And soils of this type exist on the high ridges of the Cascades for the most part. I called up a soil scientist for the state of Oregon. His name's Jim McClinton in Portland. He sent me out tables that would give a conversion between volume production in cubic feet. This is for Douglas fir, which would be the primary crop, I'd suspect. And the lowest they go on the table is 58 cubic feet. That corresponds to the site index of 80. So you're talking about everything thrown into that category under that condition as far as, in other words, if you produce 50 cubic feet of mercantile timber a year, you're forest land, you know, which seems out of line to me. There's
excuse me, I'm sorry, is your name Kim?
No, Pat.
Pat. Okay. The income figures you have here are net income figures. The income tests that the bill proposes to use are gross
Yeah, no, my point behind it really was not a point with regards to the bill on that.
Okay.
So much as to say, you should take a look at what you're looking at in way of productivity as far as this
okay.
land out here.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Really wasn't with regards to the income test there. And so I go on, I say, the soil of this type exists in the high ridges of the Cascades for the most part. Note the index numbers on the attached soil sheets to compare. Well, the soil sheets I haven't included because it was quite a batch of them. I've already addressed the inappropriateness of soil capability classes to measure agricultural lands. I've found no EFU land in Yamhill County that would meet the density requirement. Turns out, really the second category or the second condition that needs to be fulfilled in that marginal lands definition is an OR statement in there in that second condition. One of them has to do with productivity of the land, and basically no land is excluded on that or put into marginal farm because of that definition, that part. The first part that had to deal with the part that dealt with 70% of the land within an area consisting of at least 320 acres had to be of 20 acres or under in size, as far as ownerships are concerned.
Yeah.
I couldn't find any in Yamhill County that fed that way, and I didn't even the parts of Clackamas County I looked at, I didn't find any that would meet that condition either. My feeling, as far as marginal land definition, anyway, should be based on the productivity aspect, not the density aspect, or let's not really call it marginal farmland, you know. And so I go on and say, likewise, you would find precious little land, if any, within the state that would meet this definition. Obviously, no land would meet the definition on soil productivity requirement. Sections 3 and 4 act as restrictive conditions upon the definition. And I felt the creation of a panel of 3 to 5 members with final determination on permits and EFU land in the county totally eliminates any elected representation for property owners in those areas. And I did go ahead and say, you might recall last legislative session that 1,000 Friends was considering introducing legislation to remove elected officials' ability to overrule appointed county planning commissioners. And it appears that they're attempting to do that through this Senate bill right here out in the EFU lands. The people, I feel, need more, not less representation in land use decisions. And I feel also that standing for appeal should be restricted by participation in geographical location and not by an occupation within the county. Also, I feel like that there would be an awful lot of people in this that might even live, if you did create this panel, that would live in the EFU area that would be disqualified from being able to be part of that panel themselves. They would be disenfranchised. They could not even... their name couldn't even be submitted for to serve on that panel, even though they lived in that area.
Mr. Chairman, because of the use of full-time commercial farm operator, because of that line?
Yes, yes. Well, I could. I don't know what that means, you know. I have an idea of that. That's about all I have to say. I don't think Senate Bill 237 is the way to fly if we're really trying to reform land use planning.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr.? Okay.
My name is Ken Clark. I live near Wilsonville, Oregon. I would like to go on record as being opposed to Senate Bill 237 in its entirety. I believe that it would force increased agricultural production in certain market areas in order to qualify for this magic $20,000 number. I think that it implies that increased agricultural production is good, necessary, and economically sound enough to support with law. Will we not also be required to support the prices of these overproduced crops when the real market value declines? Consumers can only use so many cherries, so many filberts, etc. That's been the case with with dairy products, it's been the case with tobacco, it's been the case with a lot of other items that we support, and wheat. Secondly, I think this bill must be recognized for what it is. It's the product of a special interest group to further the desires of that group. It represents a new standard, a new set of weights and measures in a system that has already been criticized regularly for exactly that sort of thing. There are a lot of people that are tired of chasing rainbows and fighting windmills. I think you need something that's solid. I think you need something there that's going to be there next week. It's going to be there the week after. You can't keep changing it. Thirdly, it must be recognized that this bill will also not be the bill to end all bills. Any undefined term in this bill will have to be redefined again and again. This will simply be the first in a series of new laws to further redefine old laws, and you'll wind up with a constant change in the law. Under the provisions of this bill, some owners would need to prove through the use of the land and a gross farm income, an arbitrary gross farm income, I might add, that they are worthy of their own land. If not, you could be forced to sell, and presumably, you could sell this property to who? This land is not worth anything to anyone.
Where is the provision that says that an owner of the land would have to sell it?
I'm saying that you could be forced to move off of your own land.
What's the provision in here that says you have to move off your own land?
That says you have to move off your own land? If you cannot meet the minimum income, right? If you can't meet the magic $20,000 per year for 3 years, you've got your trailer house on there or whatever, then presumably you could be...
That's if you were on the land when this went into effect.
That's right.
If you moved on to it with the idea of farming it, but you didn't farm it.
If you farmed it and you did not make the $20,000, correct?
If you put a home on it.
If you farmed it and you didn't make the $20,000, presumably after 3 years, they could say goodbye. It's time for you to go.
How would you suggest that if the objective, now maybe that's not your objective, but if the objective of the bill is to maintain farm land for farm uses, and I'm not trying to defend this particular provision, but what the committee and what various witnesses have been grappling with here is how do you provide for, in effect, actually setting up a farm and building a home on it, and then the thing turns out not to be a farm at all, and you have now converted farmland to non-farm uses. And what they've been trying to grapple with here is some sort of standard to do that. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason for the concept of you wanted to let people set up a farm and work at it, and therefore, instead of prohibiting the right to have a home on that land, was the provision for a temporary home until, in effect, it was proved out. It's like the old idea of homesteading.
Right.
It's a problem of grappling with how you, and that's what this bill, I think, was attempted to do. Now, it may have defects in it, but its objective was exactly to try to provide for such farms, but to keep the provision for establishing farms from being misused by people who really didn't have that intention.
And why not go all the way back to square one and everyone start there? Everyone prove that indeed, if the zoning is farmland, that they meet some per acre requirement. What I'm saying is there are people that are already in a charter member group, an EFU group, that got into the law. They don't have to prove anything. They don't have to prove that 50% of their...
That's right, we can't throw them off because they have property rights.
That's right.
Yeah.
They've got 50% of their, they don't have to prove that they've got 50% of their income from that land. And what I'm saying is, if you're going to do it for some people, let's do it for everybody.
Well, we can't go all back to square one, but should we then continue the process that got us into this thing, which you're criticizing, forever? And we're just trying to find some way to get that transition so that we don't have any more unnecessary conversions of farmland to non-farm purposes. And this bill may not do it, but that's what we're searching for, and that's why I get a little unhappy. Of course, if you don't care about farmland, that's a different thing. But if you do care about it and how to preserve it, what we're trying to find is a mechanism that will do that. I hope you'll understand that that's the essence, at least, of my feeling about it. I don't know the answer. I'm not a farmer. And that's why I'm interested in your testimony, and that's why I say to you, can you suggest some standards by which we can accomplish this purpose of stopping the unnecessary erosion of farmland?
Do we know that that exists, in fact?
Oh, yes, sure we do. All you have to do is look at maps. You're darn well right we know it. We know it from the standpoint of figures in the Willamette Valley of the...
Is there a reason for that? Is there an economic reason for that?
I bet there is, because land is more valuable to somebody if they build a house on it than if they farm it, or if they build a shopping lot on it.
Mm-hmm. And how far are we going to go to protect that? How far am I going to have to go to pay for that?
That's our question.
I'm going to pay for it.
That's our question. No, we all pay for it.
Yeah. And that's what you're asking, and I'm saying no.
Don't do anything.
No.
Let the land go, be converted to other purposes.
It won't at this point. There's a tremendous amount of land that is already protected. You're talking about land that hasn't fallen under some designation up to this point. How much land is that?
I don't think we're talking about anything in
any kind of large scale. Everything has been zoned. It's, you know, it's all laid out. But why are we going on with this process? Why do we need to change the standards again?
Well, I'm not trying to argue. I'm trying to say there's been a great deal of criticism that the present law is too inflexible. It does not provide for exceptions, and that's what this bill is trying to do. Rational exceptions. But that's okay. I think you understand where I'm coming from. I'm trying to look for answers. That's all. I'm not trying to argue with you.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to argue either.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, to conclude, I think that that people really want some real land use reform, but I don't think this is it. I think it'd be a system of land redistribution and wealth, really, whereby you could have a farmer, say, that's got 600 acres next to somebody that's got his 20, and this guy wants to move on to that 20 acres. And he moves on there for 3 years and it just doesn't work out. I mean, the bugs come 1 year, freezes the next year, wipes out his crop, whatever. Anyway, at the end of 3 years, he doesn't make it, okay? So he's going to have to move off of that land and, in effect, probably sell it unless he's got a fortune stuck in the bank, okay? Now, who's going to buy that land? There's precious few people that are interested in it. The guy that lives 2 miles away is probably not very likely to buy it. The guy next door, probably. Somebody that lives in Eugene, if this place is in Wilsonville or wherever, he's not even going to touch it. Who cares? It's only 20 acres. So in effect, it's a system of land redistribution. If the guy fails, he's got a captive market. It's somebody within the area and probably somebody bordering him that he's got to sell to. And he's going to sell that at a reduced price. The guy says it isn't any good for anything. It's already proved to be a failure. Why do I want it? I'll take it off your hands for taxes, back taxes. And then he can turn around and make the same argument in the future, in rezoning. Let's say the 5 years period is up and it's time to relook at the comprehensive plan. He takes a look at that and he says, man, this place really stinks over here. You know, it's been a failure for this guy, this guy, this guy. I've got it now. He says, this isn't farmland. So he gets it shifted. He gets it into something else. Rural residential, whatever. In essence, all he's done is just redistributed the wealth. The other guy could have done it, but he didn't have the proof that it failed. This guy's picked up on nothing, and he makes it into something. He can resell it on 5-acre lots, 2-acre lots, whatever he comes up with.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dorothy Anderson?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dorothy Anderson from Eugene. I'm here today speaking for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We submitted testimony in writing on the 15th, dealing generally with both Senate Bills 234 and 237. Since we did not at that time comment on several of the provisions in your gross Senate Bill 237, we should like to take this opportunity to supplement our previous testimony. For Section 4, dealing with attorney fees, those citizens who have found it necessary to go to court to correct violations of Oregon's land use laws have found the process to be very expensive. We find it unfortunate that such a recourse is even necessary. We support provisions such as that contained in Section 4 to reimburse plaintiffs for their attorney fees and expenses when the court finds that indeed there has been a violation. This section would apply only to very limited situations where the protection of agricultural land is at stake, and we believe it deserves enactment. Section 8, there are two parts, one part on standing. We also support subsection 2 of Section 8. This would give standing to any farmer in a county for review of a hearings officer's decision on permits involving land in an exclusive farm use zone. Maintaining a viable agricultural industry is of concern to every commercial farmer. These farmers should be allowed to do everything within their power to help protect the agricultural land base in their areas. Their economic interest in protecting that base should entitle them to standing in court. The other part of Section 8 dealing with hearings officers. In testimony before the House Energy and Environment Committee, we expressed concern with the proposal that the state require that a hearings officer's decision be the final determination at the local level. However, we did suggest that in very limited circumstances where there are clear state standards and directives, as there are with agricultural land, such a requirement would be both justified and workable. Therefore, we do support subsection 1 of Section 8. Section 10, dealing with minor partitions. The only difference between a major and minor partition, as already was pointed out to you, is that the former involves the creation of a road. As it pertains to the standards in ORS 92.044, the overall effect of the land division on an area is the same for either type of partition. For that reason, we would suggest that counties be required to review tentative maps and plans of all minor partitions where dwellings will be located, not just those in exclusive farm use zones as proposed here. The concerns for potable water supply, sewage disposal, fire protection, and hazard should be part of the land division process throughout the rural area. Sections 11 and 13 we dealt with in our April 15th statement. Section 11 is the one that deals with a review of undeveloped partitions and their vacation if they're not in accordance with acknowledged plans. There seems to be some question on the part of some people, but there certainly are a lot of partitions in existence that were not done in accordance with the statewide planning goals. For example, as we pointed out in the written statement that we submitted, the League of Women Voters of Central Lane County, Senator Dave will get wakened up here when I talk about Lane County, analyzed partitioning activity just in less than a 2-year period in an area surrounding Eugene Springfield metropolitan area. This was January 1978 to August of 1979. And in that very short period, we found that 17,000 acres had been partitioned. All but 2,300 of those 17,000 acres had been designated, even at that time, by the county for various types of resource use, agriculture or forestry, and yet the vast majority of these partitions did result in parcels of less than 20 acres. So there are a lot of what you might want to call illegal partitions out there, and therefore we think that a review of these that are still undeveloped is definitely something that should be done. Also, section 13 is the one that deals with consolidated.
Would you excuse me a moment, please, Dorothy? Could you tell me, what is the progress?
I believe it is moving. It's looking more promising. They have zoned more land for agriculture.
I had a written contract from the commissioners, didn't I? 1976 that they would.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, we now have a different board.
I see.
And it's making a big difference. It's, they're now turning around.
I feel better about it. You're telling me that it's.
It is about time things changed up.
It's like the 10th coming there, but that's.
Section 13 deals with the consolidation of contiguous ownerships. And again, we know that there were some farmers in Lane County, for example, that thought when zoning was coming along and the Goal 3, the LCDC Goal 3 on agricultural land, that now was a time for them to take some defensive action and partition just in case they later wanted to sell off that parcel. They needed some money. So a review and consolidation of these ownerships, we think, also is very much in order. So we support both sections 11 and 13.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Director. Mr. Ramsey and Mr. Larson.